scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get things going on this Tuesday, October 15th. Flames Talk this hour underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddledome. We got a busy hour for you, including lots to dive into on our Daily Flames Roundtable a little bit later on, but it's a Tuesday, and that means it's time to check in with our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave, or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Hello, Mr. Saravalli. Happy Tuesday to you. What's going on?
Not much. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. I'm very curious on your impressions of the 3-for-3 Calgary Flames to start the season.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily had that on my bingo card. But look, this team's off to a good start. I think they're motivated to show everyone that they can beat the projections and predictions for this team. I think, you know, we saw a lot of them kind of having the Flames in the bottom five of the league. And that doesn't mean that the first three games have changed that. But I think this is kind of what we were talking about a couple weeks ago, that if a few things could happen, that you could change the complexion and view of this team if their core starts to produce. And you have 5 points out of Jonathan Huberdeau so far, and that goes a kind of a long way in terms of what that looks like.
What I'm curious, any observations in terms of the way the group is playing or what you've seen from them in these first three games?
I think the biggest thing for me is that they compete. This team works hard. And not to say that, you know, last year or the year prior, they didn't have a work ethic or compete level, but that part has certainly been pleasantly surprising. You know, they could have very easily game one of the season trailing by 3 goals on 2 different occasions to the Canucks. They could have very easily just rolled over, and they didn't. They've continued to work, and every single drop of success that this team has had through the first three games, they've earned.
Jonathan Huberdeau, you mentioned, he's got 3 goals and 5 points in his first three games. Honestly, Frank, I thought his most dangerous and impressive game was the game he didn't record a point in, and that was Sunday's win on the road in Edmonton. But what your thoughts on the start Jonathan is out to, and what that could mean for him? What that could mean for the team as a whole?
I see no reason why Jonathan Huberdeau can't get back to being an 85 to 90 point player in the NHL. I think a lot of it is based on trust. A lot of it is based on deployment. A lot of it is based on chemistry. And for one reason or another, he hasn't been able to find that on a consistent basis so far in Calgary. And don't mistake what I'm saying here. I'm not absolving him at all for his play in the first 2 years that he's had as a Calgary Flame. Like, not even one bit. But I think there's been a turning point here, and you can pinpoint whenever Ryan Huska decided to get on a plane and go visit Jonathan Huberdeau this summer and the time that they spent together to work through and continue to build on their relationship, because I think that's paid some early dividends to start. When you have a coach that believes in the player, when you have a player that believes in the coach, I think that just on a pure confidence level can go a long way, to say nothing of, hey, where did Jonathan Huberdeau suddenly start appearing on the penalty kill? Where did that come from? What was the genesis for that? You know, I think paying attention to his ice time is going to be a really important factor moving forward. It's not lost on me that he played more than 20 minutes on opening night. All those things kind of smashed together. Again, this is a really talented guy who's really proud And one thing that also stands out about this team is they now have a collection of 23 players who want to be in Calgary. And
right.
So I'd say the noise around this team has decreased on a significant basis. And when you know that you have all the 23 guys on your roster pulling the rope in the same direction, I think that's really powerful.
Last one on the Flames, and I think that's a huge point. I think that that's something that they've brought up numerous times, and something they've been very adamant about is that whole idea of guys wanting to be here. And the last thing that's been interesting through the three games, they go into their fourth game.
By the way, before you jump, like those core players, Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, Nazem Kadri, say whatever you want about their contracts, they want to be there. I know that for certain. Mm-hmm. And they're committed, and that means something.
Yep, 100%. And you're right, it really decreases the noise compared to the volume level the last couple of years with players leaving and, you know, a new coach, new general manager, so on and so forth, 100%. And I think that that's something that can't be understated in terms of what it might mean for the group. And you know, the last part is goaltending. When the Flames play Chicago on Tuesday night, Dustin Wolf will start. So two starts for him, two starts for Vladar in the first four games. So a straight-up rotation or platoon early on. I'm just curious, and we've talked lots about goaltending. We've talked about Cooley a lot as well. I'm just curious your thoughts on this goaltending conversation now that we've seen 2-2 through the first four games of the season.
I'm interested to see it continue to evolve. I don't think the Flames go into this season with any preconceived notions about who's going to play more. I think it's an open competition. And I think the competition is shaded toward putting Dustin Wolf in positions to best have success. That means opening night in Vancouver, we're not going to throw him to the Wolves against a team that was one win away from the conference final. We're going to give him the home opener against the Flyers. And he still gets a taste of some of the season opening magic. And then back-to-backs, we're going to go with, in the Battle of Alberta, we're going to go with Dan Vladar. And we're not going to subject him to, you know, even though it didn't happen, and it was the odd Battle of Alberta game where you were like, hey, was McDavid here? What? Like, there was certainly a weird game on a number of different levels. But the point being, they're going to try and wade into this, and at the same time, they have a really open mind of maybe Dustin Wolf in short period of time supplants Dan Vladar, and he becomes the guy that runs with the ball, and he ends up playing 52, and Vladar ends up playing 30. Or it could be the other way around, or maybe they both split it down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing to add into, which you almost never see a team get through a season with just two goalies, is the Cooley factor, which is either through injury or faulty play, the Flames will not hesitate for 1 second to bring Cooley up and use him. So I think what that's done is created a really healthy level of competition. It has allowed Dustin Wolf to continue to develop, which is really important. And beyond that, it also is setting the Calgary Flames up for the potential to move Dan Vladar at the trade deadline or before it, where they can recoup assets and reset the goalie market in their own market, I should say, reset their goalie tandem.
Yeah, yeah.
To position this team for success in the future. So it's multi-layered, multifaceted, and it's also going to continue to evolve.
Yep. Chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL insider. Joins us Tuesdays on Flames Talk from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. And plenty of intrigue around Calgary's 3-0 start. And then the team that they beat in their third game on Sunday is the Edmonton Oilers. They've allowed 15 goals in three losses, all at home, to start the season at 0-3. I'm curious your observations on Edmonton's rough start and what you've seen from the defending Western Conference champions early on.
I mean, there's certainly parts of it that are surprising. if you had said to me we'd be three games in and Connor McDavid has not scored yet, is a dash five and has 2 points, Leon Draisaitl, one goal, 1 point, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, one assist, no goals. Zach Hyman, 54 goal scorer last year, not a single point. That part has been interesting. Didn't necessarily see that coming. I would think that this team, for even as disappointing as their preseason was, just based on the peek behind the curtain that we got on the Amazon Faceoff series, that they'd be ultra motivated to hit the ground running. And I refuse to accept that this start that they had last year that was 2-9-1, which cost Jay Woodcroft his job, was without consequence, and also that it will be so easy to overcome a second time around if they go that deep. A few reasons why. One, I'm not certain that this team is that any team is capable of reeling off 24 wins in a 26 game stretch. Two, their defense certainly isn't as good. And three, the teams that they're chasing down in the division, I think, are better this year. Vegas is a much improved team, in my view. A full season of Tomas Hertl, a full season of Noah Hanifin. I just think they're a better team. So the other part about it not having any consequence, oh, we started 2-9-1, and look, we were one game away from winning the Stanley Cup. You might have won the Stanley Cup last year if you had home ice advantage. So, again, these games all mean something.
Did Stan Bowman and Jeff Jackson, did they go about prioritizing the right issues or the right areas in the offseason in that we're Skinner, we're Arvidsson, and I know we're three games in, so please, I'm not trying to suggest that this is going to be the norm and they're going to not be able to score and let in five goals a game going forward, but were the areas that they went heavy on the areas they should have gone heavy on, and did they, in your eyes, kind of target the right areas this summer?
Well, it was a really disjointed offseason for the Oilers because you have to remember that Stan Bowman wasn't hired until late July. And unfortunately, by that point, a lot of decisions had already been made. They got through free agency. They got through the draft. They had already signed Skinner. They had already signed Arvidsson. And for the most part, they were ready to roll into this season thinking that they were going to strong arm Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg. And these offer sheets came along and really kind of threw their summer out of whack. So on the surface, I will certainly agree with your premise and say that, yes, they probably have not prioritized their offseason correctly, given that they are now slower and older. However, at the time, and had everything worked out sort of the way that they had mapped it out, which means, by the way, get your damn RFAs done and signed, then... yeah, I think it probably they would have prioritized it correctly because they would have been able to retain some of their youth and speed and would have had the additional veteran presences of Skinner and Arvidsson, and their defense would look a whole lot different with Cody Ceci and it just it's eroded the depth that this team had, and it's eroded certainly the team speed that they've had, which is something I think to really be concerned about. If you're looking for reasons why three games into the season, I think that the Oilers have some cause for concern, it's that team speed for me. Like McDavid and company are going to score, and the defense hasn't really shown to this point to be a problem. And Stuart Skinner will rebound and is probably not an 805 goalie this season. So all those things should regress back to the mean in a positive way, but I do think the team speed is an issue.
Any other from whether it's good start, bad start, any other early season trends that have really caught your eye, Frank?
It's a balancing act. Like, I always say that this time of year is overreaction season. Like, we were ready to clobber the Pittsburgh Penguins after night one, and they, you know, end up going 2-1 on their road trip, and they've kind of settled things down. And, you know, Utah was off to an unbelievable start, and then they got waxed by the Devils. They couldn't create much. And by the way, Sean Durzi is going to be out for the foreseeable future, which really puts a dent on Utah's opening trip, even though they come home feeling good at 3-1. I mentioned Vegas, and you kind of, just keeping it in the Pacific, like, you kind of got a sense for me in terms of how, like, I think that team can be really good. And yeah, I know they started 11-0-1 last year, and then the wheels fell off. I think for some of the reasons I mentioned, they're certainly going to be in better shape. I think Vancouver's start has been really disappointing. Anytime you have, you know, you guys saw up close and personal, you're up three goals in a game, you should find a way to lock it down. You have a third period lead against the Flyers at home, you should find a way to lock it down. Short of that, I think for the most part, everything is kind of, you know, within the guardrails of like what everything probably should be through the first, I don't know, week of, this is like quite literally the first six nights of the season, seven nights. Maybe Colorado is interesting, but again, we kind of thought that this start might be a little bit rocky with Landeskog and Nichushkin out and so much of their cap space sitting on the sidelines devoted to them, not to mention Jonathan Drouin and Devon Taves.
Yep. When does Colorado start to get healthier? What's kind of the roadmap for them?
Well, Nichushkin is, I believe, eligible to be activated 1 month from today, is what I was told, November 15th.
Okay.
He's eligible to rejoin the team for practice, I think, starting at the end of this month, the beginning of November. When it comes to physical health, Landeskog is really tough because he doesn't have a date set. And by all accounts, I don't think anyone's willing to say that it's a setback, but no one has had eyes on him skating. We'd seen tons of video and, you know, he's spending time at the practice facility on the ice. No one has seen him skating in a month. So no one really knows what's going on with Landeskog. He has said publicly the last time he addressed it that everything is on the up and up and he's, you know, trending in a positive direction and piece by piece. But there really is no playbook for his injury and dealing with it. And Drouin is going to be a little bit of time, and I don't have an update on Taves.
Okay. I did want to ask you, you talked about Utah's start. You were there for the first ever game, though. Just take us through the Utah Hockey Club and being in that building and all of what went into them winning their opener as a franchise.
I mean, it was awesome. Like, I hope everyone gets a chance to experience, even in a temporary basis, that venue. It's loud. And it's quirky because there's 5,000 seats that are obstructed view and you can only see one end of the ice. But everyone in that community is really into it. Like, everyone that I bumped into was just talking about how big of a deal it is that they've got another pro sports team there. Like, they're really excited. It's awesome to watch and understand hockey for the first time through the lens of so many people that are just taking this in. Like, when you're leaving the arena, by the way, the press box is in the lower bowl. So when I'm walking out to go down to the locker room, I hear some people coming up the steps behind me, and it's a husband and wife. And the wife says, "That's the best sporting event I've ever seen live." Like, to me, you guys in Calgary, you understand it, and anywhere else someone does, you know, too, that's had this. But
yeah.
For people experiencing this for the first time, that's really cool to see. And I always say, like, just go do it. Like, if you're not a casual or you watch a little bit on TV, you got to understand the vibe in the building. It's the best live sport there is. And I know I'm, you know, trying to spread the gospel to, you know, a community that's already converted. But in this case, to see that, and I mean, you could probably make a Mormon reference there, to see that in that community, it's really kind of fun.
Alexi Lafreniere, what's happening there in terms, I know that you reported late last week some movement on a potential big-time contract extension with the former number one overall pick and the New York Rangers.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. I mean, certainly not at the finish line. And I think it was just really interesting that there was so much talk and focus on Shesterkin to know that Chris Drury is moving pieces around the chessboard at the same time. Is really kind of fascinating. It's going to be expensive for Lafreniere, and I'm sure people looked at my tweet and my reporting and said, hold on a second, how much for a guy who has 57 points as his career high? The truth is, at 22 years old, 57 points and 28 goals without playing first unit power play is really quite significant production. We know how much the cap is going up. At least next year, it's 5%, and it's probably going to be even a bigger jump the following year after. That number, if it's 8 or 8.5 or whatever that number ends up being, it's going to be a relative bargain in short order. That's if he just continues on at this current production. If he takes as big of a jump this season, and he's off to a great start, if he takes as big of a jump this season as he did last year, all of a sudden you're dealing with a 75 to 80 point player, which is a different conversation. So just staying with the same production, duplicating what he did last year at 57, he's got a hell of an arbitration case. And he only has 2 years until 2 years left of RFA status after this year. So you're looking at an arbitration case of somewhere between $6.25 or $6.5 million a year. That's a significant raise from where he's at now at 2.3. And beyond that, it just becomes a lot tougher for New York to try and put their cap picture together because you have Shesterkin there and he's due that big raise next year, whatever that ends up coming in at. And so you can kind of begin to see all this coming together for New York, and it's going to be, there's going to be some difficult decisions to make for Chris Drury.
Good stuff, Frankie. As always, appreciate the time, my friend. We'll do it again next Tuesday, and we'll see where the Flames are sitting in 1 week's time. Thank you, pal. Have a good rest of your week, hey?
Enjoy the Bedard Show.
We will indeed. First time here at the Scotiabank Saddledome in the NHL. He is.
I was going to say, because he sold out the building as a Regina Pat.
He did indeed. That's why I keep on making sure that I say first time in this building in the NHL, because indeed he did. Thank you, pal. We'll talk next week, hey?
See you later.
Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. He's our NHL insider, and he's brought to you, as always, by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Tuesday edition of the program continues, and it's time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport here at the Hot Stove Lounge at the Scotiabank Saddledome. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers, and on the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills. Well, Darren and Aaron, it happens. Derek Wills joins the program. Hey, you know what? You talk as much as I do over the course of a day.
Thought you were going to bring up Brandon.
Brandon?
When I called Parker Brandon.
Daryl Sutter called him Brandon a couple times, too. It happens
probably
to the
best
on purpose,
of us.
Actually.
It might have been. I love Brandon Parker. Gents, we did not talk about this a lot coming out of Sunday's win in Edmonton. Vix and I didn't talk about this a lot on Monday's program. But as Justin Kirkland gets ready to play his third game as a member of the Flames, scored his first career NHL goal in Sunday's win over Edmonton, and it was a pretty one as well. Guys, and I hate to do this because Kevin Rooney got hurt in the first game of the season. But through two games, it's been a pretty impressive performance from Justin Kirkland. He's looked good. The metrics have been strong. How much of a decision might the Flames have on their hands if this continues for Justin Kirkland when Kevin Rooney is ready to come back? He's eligible to come back as early as Wednesday of this week.
Well, first of all, it was so cool to see Justin Kirkland score his first NHL goal and pick up his first point in the league in the Battle of Alberta in Edmonton on Sunday night. He grew up in the province, grew up watching the Battle of Alberta, and told me it was the greatest moment of his hockey career as he helped the Flames to a 4-1 win over the Oilers on Sunday. And as a guy who spent 13 seasons in the American Hockey League and quite honestly wondered if I'd ever get a chance to call games in the National Hockey League, I kind of understand where Justin Kirkland's coming from. 28 years old, and his road to the NHL was a lot longer than most guys. And he probably wondered if he'd get a legitimate chance to prove that he could play in this league. And, you know, he's played in career games number 10 and 11 as a member of the Flames. And if he'd ever score a goal or pick up a point playing in the best league in the world. And, you know, he realized that dream on Sunday in Edmonton. So cool to see that happen. As far as the decision that Craig Conroy and the management group and Ryan Huska and the coaching staff are going to have to make, I think it could be a difficult one because I'm not sure there was a ton separating the guys who were fighting to be the Flames' fourth line center after getting through training camp in the preseason. Kevin Rooney won the job. He had the highest cap hit, had the most NHL experience, so I understand why he was the guy on opening night, but he gets hurt. And Cole Schwint, who was probably in the running as well, gets claimed on waivers by the Golden Knights, so now he's out of the running. And that left Justin Kirkland. So a guy who had a really strong training camp in preseason gets an opportunity and makes the most of it. And guys, I think he plays a pretty similar style to Kevin Rooney. He's got good size, gets in there and bangs and crashes in the forecheck. He's had some big hits. He showed in the preseason and showed the other night he can chip in offensively once in a while. So I think it could be a difficult decision, but hey, if you're the Flames franchise, that's exactly what you want.
And I'll be curious to see how it kind of sort of plays itself out when Kevin Rooney gets healthy, because I do think Justin Kirkland has put himself in a position to earn more games and earn more minutes, and his fit on that fourth line. And we heard this morning Coach Ryan Huska talk about that fourth line and liked what he saw out of that trio of Matt Coronato and Ryan Lomberg, a really effective line against the Edmonton Oilers, regardless of who was out for the Edmonton Oilers on the other side, whether it was a McDavid line or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, it really didn't seem to matter. To me, what I think it'll come down to in large part is faceoffs and the impact on the penalty kill. We've seen Justin Kirkland average almost 2 minutes per night on the penalty kill, and I think we can all agree that the penalty kill has done a fairly good job. The faceoffs will be an element that the Calgary Flames have put an emphasis on this season, so it'll be up to Kirkland to make sure that he's in the plus department on that front as well.
He's at 35%, yeah.
And so he's not quite there yet, and I know one of the things that Kevin Rooney has going for him is historically he's been a relatively effective center iceman, if I'm not mistaken, at the dot.
I think Rooney's about 45% for his career, So
it'll come down to, again, the competition in practice. It'll come down to what are you giving the Calgary Flames in games, and I think those two key areas, because I do think that those are key areas that the coaching staff will look at in determining who's going to be their fourth line center. But I've really, really liked, again, small sample size, but I've really liked Kirkland. His size, his speed, a little bit of the tenacity that he's got in his game, I think he's a perfect fit for however that line's going to be assembled. We don't know because there's Adam Klapka still in the conversation. But if you're rolling out Lomberg with Coronato, I really like that fit with Kirkland.
46.1% is Rooney's career faceoff numbers. And, you know, he did not play a ton in either of his two seasons with the Flames. Spent some time in the American League, and obviously last year missed a lot of time because of the shoulder injury. Last year was just over 46%. The year before was just under 42%. And as we mentioned, Justin Kirkland, who was actually one of the best faceoff guys in the American League last year, is at 35% in two games so far this year. I do think there is a little bit of a decision to, or there could be a bit of a decision to be made here, because Kirkland's numbers, his metrics have been pretty solid. So with Kirkland on the ice, the Flames have outscored the opposition 2-0 at 5-on-5. Scoring chances are 10-6. High dangers are 6-2. Offensive zone faceoff at 33%. And his expected goals is up over 55%. Again, one of the better 5-on-5 numbers on the team. So, again, it's based on a very small sample size. He's only played 18 minutes of 5-on-5 time in two games, but in those two games, he's been effective. We don't know about Rooney. I do always think that there is a conversation to be had, guys, about you can't lose your job to injury, and Kevin Rooney got hurt on like his first or second shift of the season. So, and we don't know when he's going to be ready to return. Maybe he's ready to return Saturday in Seattle. Maybe it has to wait a little bit. But I do think at the very least, Justin Kirkland has made this a conversation, or could make this a conversation if he does similar things again Tuesday against Chicago. So good on him, because I don't know if we expected that when this decision was made. But here's one thing that I think is important to remember. One of the reasons why the Flames were okay putting Schwint on waivers, you know, Craig Conroy has said that he was a little, maybe a little bit apprehensive that Schwint might get taken. They didn't want Schwint to get taken, but one of the reasons they were okay with taking that risk is because of what Sam Morton did during camp and because of what Justin Kirkland did during camp. And I know that Brad Pascal, the general manager of the Wranglers, has been a big fan of Kirkland's all throughout camp, and even going back to when Kirkland played in the organization before. So the org likes him, and adding him to the conversation allowed them a little bit more confidence to take the risk with Schwint, and obviously Vegas ended up claiming him. So I do think there's a potential conversation coming. I do, and that's a real credit to the way Kirkland's played in his first two games here.
It certainly is, and I guess what might be as important as anything else is that the fourth line hasn't skipped a beat. And the fourth line has played a really effective and important role for the Flames in their 3-0-0 start to the season. Ryan Lomberg, for me, is the player who has driven that line. Yep. He's the only guy who's played in all three games on the left side of that line. You've had two different centermen. You had Kevin Rooney for less than a period, so it's really tough to evaluate his season so far. And then you've had Adam Klapka and Matt Coronato split time on the right side of that fourth line. But that line's been very good, playing its role in the first three games of the season. And again, I didn't notice a drop-off or much of a change as far as style of play going from Kevin Rooney to Justin Kirkland. So, so far, so good for the 28-year-old.
Well, and the thing you want as an organization, whether it's the kids pushing up against veterans or veterans competing for ice time and spots, you need that competition where the Flames are at, because even if it is between a 28-year-old Kirkland and a veteran in Kevin Rooney, you're still creating that internal competition for ice time, which forces, even if you're Sam Morton, for example, okay, well, now you've got two guys you need to beat out. So it forces everybody in the organization to be at their best, because you don't know when you're going to lose your spot.
Yep. And at this stage of the game, I think the best place for Sam Morton is in the American Hockey League. Agreed. Yes, he's 25, but he's only had a cup of coffee playing pro hockey. Let him get his feet wet, and then I think he can start a competition between really three guys with Rooney, Kirkland, and Morton for that 4C center spot.
Yeah, and again, not bad to have center ice depth, and the Flames will take the, are they still looking for that future number one center? Yes, but having some depth down the middle is definitely not a bad thing, and good on Kirkland for adding to that conversation. Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, and for two of us here, it's our first opportunity to watch Connor Bedard up close and personal. I guess I watched him once in the Western League, so that's not quite true, but definitely since he's made the NHL, for Derek and I, our first chance to see him in person. Vix, you saw him at the World Championships this year, and where was it this year?
It was in Prague and Ostrava.
Prague and your favorite place, Ostrava. That's correct. How excited are we to see Connor Bedard in the NHL up close and personal for the first time Tuesday night?
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I hadn't seen him in person until this morning, and I crossed paths in the hallway with him. He's not a big guy, obviously, at 5'10", 185 pounds, but just such a dynamic player and just pops off the TV screen. Whenever I watch the Blackhawks, whether it be with them playing the Flames or with them playing one of the other 30 teams in the league, it's hard not to notice Connor Bedard. Obviously, he has an incredibly high hockey IQ, is very fast, has a fantastic shot. But the one thing that's jumped out to me, and I'm anxious to see how he looks in person tonight, His vision. His vision is right off the charts. So I'm excited to see him. Of course, he starred for Canada, leading the World Junior Championships in goals, assists, and points, and was tournament MVP, and was actually IIHF Player of the Year back in 2023. Just dominated in the Canadian Hockey League with the Regina Pats. 71 goals and 72 assists in his final season. Just some bonkers numbers. And then leads the NHL in rookie goals with 22 and rookie points with 61 and wins the Calder Trophy last season. So one of the most exciting young players in the game, and looking forward to seeing him in person tonight.
Yeah, you said going back to his last year as captain with Regina, 71 goals, 72 assists, 143 points. He only played 57 games
Ridiculous.
That year. That's almost a 3 point per game pace. I'm excited to see him for the first time up close as an NHLer. He's had an NHL-level shot, as you mentioned, Willsey, since he was 16 or 17 years old. Like, his ability to shoot the puck pure, but also shoot it from about 8 different angles of release, and his ability to sort of manipulate his release based on where the defender's legs are right in front of him is second to none at the junior ranks, and certainly it's up there in the elite category in the NHL. And I was in the Blackhawks room this morning. There's a lot of talk about Connor Bedard, naturally. He comes to a Canadian market. He's going to draw a lot of attention. We know how much attention he drew at Winsport practice on Monday. But he's better than he was last year in a variety of ways. And the most important way, in talking to Nick Foligno, talking to Coach Luke Richardson, it's that he doesn't have to force something anymore. He doesn't have to go out there and feel like he's supposed to do something every single shift. He's more willing to let the play come to him and make the smart play, not the I need to pull everybody out of their seat play every single time. And that's really benefited him offensively, because the chances actually come more when you play a little bit less relaxed and you're trying to force things, because you're creating a lot of turnovers, you're putting in pucks in a lot of places that aren't going to be retrievable, so on and so forth. So he doesn't get as frustrated maybe as he did when he'd go a period without generating something. He lets the game come to him, which makes him even more dangerous.
I'm just super excited to watch him play at this level for the first time up close and personal. And, you know, there's a few things that are really interesting. He's off to a great start, 5 points in 3 games. He had a 61-point year last year, so a little less than a point per game last year. But if you took a look at some of the metrics from Connor Bedard last year with Chicago, and the with or without you numbers, and what Chicago looked like with Bedard on the ice, they were a very competent NHL team. They were a competitive NHL team. They could go head-to-head with a lot of teams in this league. Without Bedard, it was like you were playing a bad American League team. And I hate saying it like that, but it's true. The metrics went from here, and you're like, oh, geez. I mean, that's very respectable to hear. You're like, oh, my gosh, that's some of the worst that we've seen in ages in the
NHL.
Didn't
look like a bad American League team to the Flames, I'll tell you that.
That's true. They seem to raise their level when
Touché.
They play the Flames. It just that's the type of impact that Bedard made last year, which I think is really important to point out. That's how good he was. The guy's a shot machine. That's going to just continue. He averaged more than 4 shots on goal last year in his rookie year. And here's the interesting thing for me with Bedard. So in Connor McDavid, the last generational player we've had in this league was McDavid in 15, 16, 9 years ago. And his first year, he was just over a point per game. Remember, he broke his collarbone.
Clavicle.
And, same thing.
you too.
Did he really correct me?
On a correct set? Yeah, I did.
I know what we're ending.
It was a big deal about the clavicle.
We're ending the show. That's it. No, so Connor McDavid broke his clavicle, which is also known as the collarbone, about midway through that season. But he still ended up with 48 points in 45 games. So similar, Bedard was 61 and 68, but McDavid jumped from 48 to 100 in his second year in the NHL. And it's early yet, but Bedard is up over point per game, 5 points in 3 games. I'm really curious to see what year two, stronger, more in tune with the day-to-day grind of the NHL, all that type of stuff, what year two looks like in the NHL for Bedard in terms of his points. Can he be an 85-90 point guy as a sophomore in the NHL? So far, he's on pace to answering that question as a yes, but we're 3 games in. But Bedard is that next one. He's the next generational guy. And the jump from McDavid from year one to year two was 48 points, just over a point per game, to 100 points in 82. Again, McDavid's numbers a little skewed because he only played the 45 games. But I am curious to see what type of jump we're looking at from Bedard. Long story short, I'm really excited to watch him here at the Dome. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I do think he can make a huge jump to being better than a point-a-game player. Can he get to 90 or 100? We'll have to wait and see. I'm not sure that he has the same supporting cast that McDavid did, and certainly doesn't have a Leon Draisaitl that he can sometimes play with. But I will give the Blackhawks credit. Pat, to your point, in most games last year, and they took 2 of 3 from the Flames, and 2 of 3 were played without Connor Bedard. The Blackhawks were not a very talented team, but what they've done is surround their franchise player with a lot more talent. And we had a chance to chat with Ryan Huska this morning. He talked about all of the veterans that Kyle Davidson went out and got for his team. He added 8 veterans during the offseason. Laurent Brossoit, who's hurt right now, Craig Smith, Alec Martinez, Tyler Bertuzzi, Patrick Maroon, former Flame TJ Brody, Toivo Teravainen, and Ilya Mikheyev. Between them, they have played 4,939 regular season games in this league, and their combined cap hit for this season, those 8 guys, $28,287,500. So they've added almost $30,000 or $30 million in contracts this season to support Connor Bedard, who must feel like a weight's been taken off his shoulders and like he doesn't have to do it all for his team like he did in his rookie season. So he's got better players around him. He's got a year of experience, and I would be surprised if Connor Bedard, as we mix up names, isn't a point-of-game player, maybe even better this year.
I mean, might be a little early. It's only 3 games in, as you mentioned, Patty. On pace for 136 points. I'm going to take the under on that. I don't know if I necessarily see him flirting with 140 points this season, but
could
I don't
he flirt,
see.
Could he flirt with 90 or 100?
I think he could absolutely flirt with 90 or 100. I think, to be perfectly honest, if he just came in, if he played all 82 games and had 82 points, point per game, that's great for most guys. I almost feel like it would be a little bit of a disappointment in Connor Bedard's case, and that's putting a lot on a guy that's a sophomore. But as you mentioned, he is a generational talent. And, you know, 61 points in 68 games as a freshman in the NHL, not bad.
Yep.
And room to improve.
Yep.
Well, Flames are on pace for 164 points this season. So,
well, there you go.
I mean,
I just got schooled.
Jonathan Huberdeau's on pace for the exact same as Connor Bedard. I mean, nobody's buying into, you know, full-year projections. But I do buy into Connor Bedard's a phenom. He's in his sophomore year, and usually year one to year two, you see a big jump from players of that caliber. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if he flirts with triple digits in the slightest this year.
He's going to hear this conversation and say, those guys in Calgary, screw them. I'm going for 160.
Well, then he's going to say,
I wish him luck.
Then he's going to come in here and say, don't you forget that a clavicle is the same thing as a collarbone.
What about 215? Maybe he'll break Gretzky's record this season.
Hey, now.
Well, that's our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Daily Flames Roundtable, as we start to wrap things up this hour, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.